working for palliative care.
The actual word palliative care doesn't appear in budget 2016. So although we've heard good rhetoric from the government, there hasn't actually been any action. And so this bill is trying to drive us forward to actually make tracks. Even on the government webpage, it's clear that this is an overwhelming need for Canadians, especially as they age.
In the news, Bill C-14 has now passed through Parliament without a major Senate amendment. Also, another court ruling on the issue of doctor-assisted death, a win for pro-lifers in BC, and a new study on the positive economic impacts of religious institutions.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Trudeau government's Bill C-14, the one enabling doctor-assisted suicide, has now passed both the House and the Senate. Last week, the Senate sent a version of the bill back to the House of Commons, a version that would have broadened the scope of those eligible for physician-assisted death. The House voted to turn that version down. Health Minister Jane Philpott.
We've been able to support the large majority of the amendments that they've put forward. There is one in particular that we have not been able to support. And again, the reasoning behind that goes back to our responsibility as government, our responsibility to look to people and to look to, in particular, in this case, vulnerable people, and feeling that the extraction of the language around the proximity of death, the reasonable foreseeability of natural death, is something that is not appropriate at this time. And we believe that the balance that was struck in the original legislation provides that protection for vulnerable people.
On Friday, the Senate took up the original version from the House of Commons again. First, there was a motion to refer the issue of eligibility to the Supreme Court for a decision. That motion was defeated.
All those in favor of the motion will please rise.
In the end, senators voted 44-28 to acquiesce to the House version of the bill. Almost as soon as the results of that Senate vote were announced, the House adjourned for the summer. Meantime, there was an interesting court ruling on this issue last week in Ontario. A judge there said anyone applying for doctor-assisted death needs approval from a judge. ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten says that ruling does set an interesting precedent.
So in this one particular case, a judge did actually grant authorization, but he ruled that everyone else needs to get that judicial authorization as well. And I think it's, again, not great, but it's better than the alternative in that we have both medical and judicial oversight of the process in order to try to minimize the harm of legalizing assisted suicide and euthanasia. It reduces the risk, particularly for vulnerable people who would otherwise be taken advantage of.
It's unclear what effect the ruling will have now that C-14 is the law of the land, although each province can set up its own regulatory regime in terms of the specific conditions for doctor-assisted suicide. One thing the Senate did do was amend the original Bill C-14 to include informed consent of palliative care options. The House weakened that provision a little bit, wording that some critics say leaves the issue as somewhat nebulous. The amendment, though, came as a coalition of evangelical, Catholic, Muslim, and Jewish faith groups called for increased attention to the whole palliative care issue. Julia Beasley is with the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada. She says the coalition was looking for five things.
First is that we would like to see the government develop a pan-Canadian palliative and end-of-life care strategy that will address the need for and availability of palliative care for all Canadians. We ask that essential hospice and palliative care services be made more available and more accessible in all settings, including at home. We ask that all levels of government work together to improve the quality and consistency of palliative and end-of-life care across Canada, for more support for family caregivers in the form of flexible financial and tax benefits, and that all levels of government work together to ensure the healthcare system respects the psychosocial and spiritual needs of patients and their families in the dying process.
Ontario Conservative MP Marilyn Gladue has introduced a private member's bill on palliative care for debate later this year. That's the topic on the feature later in the program, and Beasley says that bill could well address all of the points on the coalition's wish list. In other news, a win for pro-lifers and for freedom of speech in British Columbia. Back in March, the Right to Life Society in Kelowna, BC, posted a billboard on one of the major highway entries into their community. It was very similar to that campaign We Need a Law ran last year. Two pictures, one of a puppy with the caption, "Kill a puppy, cruelty." The other picture, an unborn child. That caption, "Kill a baby, choice." Some folks in Kelowna didn't like the billboard and complained to the Advertising Standards Council of Canada. They objected specifically to the use of the word baby to describe that unborn child. Kelowna Right to Life's Marlon Bartram says they defended the use of that word quite easily.
We gathered up instances where the unborn child is referred to as a baby in several government documents, for example. We found one at our local liquor store that was warning against the dangers of drinking while pregnant, and they referred to the unborn child as a baby in that official government of BC document. We also had a document sent here from Health Canada warning of the dangers of food poisoning while pregnant and being careful how to avoid food poisoning because that can cause a miscarriage. And in that document, again, referred to the unborn child as a baby. I went to the local gas station and found a pack of cigarettes that said, smoking can be harmful to your baby, and on there was a picture of a pregnant woman. And then we also pointed out four or five different examples of other advertisers referring to it as a baby as well. The Doritos ad that caused a bit of a stir about 2 months ago, I think it was a Super Bowl ad, actually. We also found examples where Pampers and one of these entertainment ultrasound businesses called UC Baby.
In the end, the complaint was dismissed. That means the billboard can stay. Bartram says there was more going on here than just a dispute about a definition.
They just want to keep it hidden, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that many people are culpable in abortion, whether they've had abortions directly or whether they've helped people get abortions or pressured people to get abortions. So any reminder of an abortion is a prick to their conscience because they know in their heart that abortion is wrong. They would rather just shut up the people who are bringing it up than they would support our right to freedom of speech, which is what this comes down to.
He says the publicity generated by this issue has gotten them some extra donations. That means the billboard could wind up staying in place longer than originally planned. We've got a link up to the Kelowna Pro-Life website from the Lighthouse News homepage if you're interested in more information. And finally, have you ever wondered what economic impact your church has on your local community? Cardis has been wondering about that. The organization recently completed a pilot study of 10 religious communities in Toronto, 8 churches and 2 mosques. They wanted to see how the presence of those institutions impacted the economies of the local neighborhoods where they're situated. Milton Friesen is the Social Cities Program Director at Cardis. He says the study used a pretty complex matrix to figure out those economic impacts.
There are 49 different measurement variables that are used to find that economic matrix and the replacement cost matrix. Those are things like crime prevention. Do they have any role in preventing divorce? How much does it cost when people divorce? Do they provide any job training? How much is that worth? How many volunteer hours do they contribute? Do they host conferences? Do they offer food banks? You know, what's the value of that food bank service? Those kinds of variables.
At the end of the day, Friesen says, the general rule of thumb is that a local religious community contributes an economic benefit 4 to 5 times its annual budget. So if there's a $250,000 annual budget for your church, the positive community impact is in the range of over $1 million. Friesen says this should give particular pause to municipal leaders in the occasional debates that spring up about taking away property tax exemptions from church properties.
Research like this would suggest that even though you can't always see it visibly or clearly, there is significant value. So let's say a city, you know, wants to get rid of this tax-exempt status and somehow add a little bit more revenue to their land tax. If you tax an institution and get $50,000 a year of extra income or whatever that amount is for the property, but that same institution is putting back into your community more than $1 million worth of value, you know, you can ask me who's getting the deal. Maybe the city needs to think about whether or not that kind of decision to tax the property is going to make it more difficult for them to survive or to contribute what they do. And if they reduce the number of those entities in their communities, the loss in terms of quality of life for the wider community would be significant. It's something the city can't afford to replace.
Cardis says it'll do more study on this issue in the future. Back with more after this.
The Molly Matters campaign has gained momentum with the introduction of Bill C-225, named Cassie and Molly's Law for the preborn girl Molly and her mother Cassie, who were tragically killed in December 2014. WeNeedALaw.ca has postcards supporting this bill you can order for free. They'll send you a pack of 25 cards and a list of 25 MPs. You can add a personal note to the card. Email Cassie at cassy@weneedalaw.ca to order a package today.
And we're back on the program. As you heard in the news portion, Bill C-14 has now cleared both the House and the Senate. The bill has brought a lot of increased attention to so-called end-of-life issues, including the need for better palliative care across the country. The Conservative MP for Sarnia-Lambton, Marilyn Gladue, has introduced a private member's bill on this, and she's hoping the increased attention this has been getting will help get that bill passed. We reached her in her Ottawa office. Ms. Gladue, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me, Al.
Bill C-277, we're calling it an act to provide for the development of a framework for palliative care in Canada. Talk to me about what it is and what you're trying to accomplish here.
Well, Al, there are more than 70% of Canadians who don't have access to good palliative care. And in the previous session of Parliament, there was an all-party parliamentary committee that studied the issue and came with recommendations. So this bill is actually the result of that report, and it recommends providing a framework for palliative care across Canada, including defining the services provided, the training required for different levels of healthcare providers, an actual plan to ensure that Canadians have consistent access to palliative care, and suggests a mechanism for adopting this into the federal regulations.
Charlie Angus introduced a private member's motion last time around before the election.
Absolutely, Ed. And that was just at the end of this all-parliamentary committee. He brought a motion and it got the dialogue going. But to be fair, Al, there hasn't been a lot of action. And I think right now, especially with the assisted dying legislation, the special committee that studied the Carter decision said that if you did not actually have good palliative care, a true voluntary choice could not be made. And so I think this bill is coming at an appropriate time. The Liberal Party has come with a convention resolution on palliative care. The NDP are clearly supportive in the House. And Minister Philpott herself has said there are $3 billion in this budget for home and palliative care. So I think the time is right, and I think there'll be a lot of party support on all sides.
And that was going to be my next question. You know, pretty much everybody, including the then opposition Liberals, voted in favor of Angus's motion for a pan-Canadian palliative and end-of-life care strategy. Do you think you've got the political wherewithal to carry this through on an all-party basis?
Well, it's an interesting question, Al, because although we tried to bring numerous amendments to the assisted dying legislation to add palliative care access for all Canadians, those amendments were not accepted. And I know that the actual word palliative care doesn't appear in Budget 2016. So although we've heard good rhetoric from the government, there hasn't actually been any action. And so this bill is trying to drive us forward to actually make tracks. The amendment that was accepted by the Liberals was an amendment to study the need for palliative care. And I think there's been lots of studies, and even on the government webpage, it's clear that this is an overwhelming need for Canadians, especially as they age.
Has C-14 and the Carter decision changed the landscape on this in any substantive way? I mean, a few years ago we were talking about it, and it was more, if I can use the word theoretical, it was a bit ethereal. Yeah, we'd like palliative care. Now, all of a sudden, with Carter and C-14, the rubber has really hit the road on this whole end-of-life issue.
I think you're right, Alan. I think it's brought not just awareness, but the special committee that helped draft that C-14 legislation, I could read you verbatim from the preamble of the bill, stated that a request for physician-assisted death cannot be truly voluntary if the option of proper palliative care is not available to alleviate a person's suffering. And so they saw it as key. I think they've raised awareness that way. And there's been numerous stakeholders who have come out in support of my bill, and we would expect as time marches on to see even more support.
So what are the mechanics and timelines on this? I mean, we're adjourning for summer. It'll be September before we even get to this. Any idea where you are in the rotation of having this come up?
Yeah, in terms of the lottery, as you know, all 338 get a number out of the lottery, and I was number 44. So the first 30 bills have been looked at up to the end of June. And then in the fall, it'll be the start of the next replenishment. So we would expect to see this bill go through its first, second, and third readings by the end of the year, I would think.
Any indication? I mean, you've alluded to the fact that the health minister has indicated something like this is needed. I know the government has the option of adopting a private member's bill and saying, you know what, we're going to make this our own and we're going to push it through. Are you hearing anything like that?
I haven't heard anything yet. Certainly, I'm looking to meet with the minister and understand where she sits on this. Anything can happen in politics, as you know, and it may be that the government will want to bring their own bill on palliative care, which would then render this one redundant.
Ms. Gladue, thank you very much for this.
Absolutely, Al. Thanks for inviting me, and look forward to talking to you again.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.